Welcome to Periodical Radio, the program about magazines and journals. I'm your host, Steve Black, librarian at the College of St. Rose in Albany, New York, and author of the book Serials and Libraries, Issues and Practices. The topic of this installment of Periodical Radio is The Rejected Quarterly, a unique literary magazine. Quoting from their homepage, the magazine accepts fiction that doesn't fit anywhere else to 8,000 words. All fiction submitted must be accompanied by at least 5 rejection slips. Xerox is okay. The Rejected Quarterly desires stories that are as unique as possible. We want unusual stories but high-quality writing, and a story to tell and or a coherent idea or ideas to express are the most important criteria. We will consider just about any type of story, but remember we are looking for originality. End quote. The magazine also includes poems about rejection, reproductions of rejection slips, and stories about the experience of being rejected. My guest is co-founder and editor of The Rejected Quarterly, Daniel Weiss. Well, Dan, welcome to Periodical Radio.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Dan, in my brief introduction, I quoted some of the author's guidelines from your homepage to let our listeners know the basic concept of The Rejected Quarterly. But tell us more. Why did you launch the magazine, and what are its guiding principles?
Well, I launched it. It was an idea in my head for a long time, actually. And I kind of did a prototype. I did one in pen, you know, by hand. And I just showed it to some friends. And then the motivation was being a writer myself, getting rejections, and the type of rejections I got. And I kind of felt a sympathy for writers. What happened is, I had a few agents for novels, and I remember one particular novel is a speculative fiction, kind of a humorous speculative fiction novel. And what happened is I'd get back these rejection slips forwarded from my agent from the publishers that said things like, well, this is a really good story, it's really funny, but there's not much of a market for humorous speculative fiction right now. And I think to myself, well, you know, if they said this, the characters are not very developed or the plot is too thin, something I could work on. But if they say there's not much of a market for it, there's nothing I could do other than write for a particular market, which is not what I wanted to do. My view is if I'm going to spend my time writing, it takes me a long time. I want to write something I have some feel or some passion for. So, my theory is that things are rejected often for ideas for reasons other than quality. And that's the kind of rejections I was getting often. Not always, but often. So that's why I launched the magazine, to give people who write good stories but don't happen to fit anywhere a place to publish.
And just to clarify, this is a literary magazine. You don't have anything to do with scholarly journal articles that are, research articles that are rejected by scholarly journals. That's separate from what you do.
That's different, yes. Yeah, this is strictly for fiction other than rejection-related poetry, or we have a column, The Art of Rejection, every week about literary rejection. But other than that, it's all fiction.
Do you alone make all the editorial decisions for The Rejected Quarterly?
Not alone. Jeff Ludeke is my co-editor. He usually reads all the stories as well as I, and we usually come to a decision together.
Now, for the stories, they have to be accompanied by 5 rejections. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Why 5?
Well, it's a kind of an arbitrary number. You just want to have some standards, because otherwise people can just say, oh, this has been rejected, a lot of times. And, that's not good enough. The people actually have to include the slips. And it just seems like if you get rejected once or twice, that could just be that magazine doesn't have room at the time, but they would print it. But if you get 5, I think once you get 5, you've proved that it's going to be tough to place. And of course, you can get 20, but it becomes tough, and it becomes unwieldy to send in 20. And I can only print a representative number anyway. I can't ever print all 5. I don't have room. So 5 just seemed to be a good number.
How often do you reject submissions? I mean, you don't accept everything that comes in with 5 rejections, right?
No. Unfortunately, all the time. Only a small, even in our magazine, only a small number of submissions get published. That's been one of the kind of enlightening things, I think. Interesting things is that being on the other side, I never imagined to be an editor. You know, I consider myself still a writer. And I have to reject things. And I have to admit that one of the things I found is a lot of things do get rejected for quality issues. I get a lot of things that you wonder why people send them out. But also we get a lot of things that just are very well written and just you can't understand why they weren't published.
So speak now to budding writers. I mean, we hope here at the College of St. Rose to have a lot of our own students listening to this program. And, you know, an aspiring writer, and based on your experience, what would be some of the advice you would give them?
Well, I would say use your own voice. Don't be afraid of being different or unique. I don't think it pays to try and cash in on any trends. You know, people tend to want to, you know, if vampire stories are in or historical fiction or whatever it is, I don't think you need to write for those areas. I think use your own voice. Don't be afraid to be different. I think it's okay. In fact, it's positive to stand out. Look over your work. Make sure, you know, read it out loud. I think that's a key. When you read out loud, you hear sometimes the dialogue doesn't sound natural. But once you, if you've read out loud, you're happy with it. I think that's the key.
What are some of the legitimate reasons for rejecting submissions? And I mean more broadly, beyond the rejected quarterly, what are some of the legitimate reasons that, you know, things are rejected? You mentioned a few, but could you expound on that a little bit?
Yeah. From my experience, a lot of it is people not taking the time to really edit their work. It may seem great as a first draft or, you know, read it over once, but I think expanding on the advice you asked me to give, to put it aside for a little while and then read it again, you know, at least a week or two, maybe a little more. Because sometimes people turn in stories to me that have bad continuity. Things happen and they don't follow what happened earlier. There's often, I'm not talking about necessarily, you know, for an English class, but grammar that just doesn't work. You often have dialogue that doesn't sound real at all. And for me, those are the big issues. The story has to seem real, and for that to happen, characters have to talk like they're human beings and have you have to view them as individuals, not as mouthpieces for the author. To me, that's a big, I see a lot of those kind of stories.
How about really basic things like spelling and punctuation?
Once in a while, you know, when a lot of manuscripts have a misspelled word here or there or a little bit of punctuation, which I just, you know, if it's really bad, I will edit that. But every once in a while you have somebody who just doesn't seem to have a command of it. It's not that common, but yeah, that right away you start thinking, why did this person send this in? It should have been proofread if the author doesn't have those skills and have somebody else read it who does, because that kind of a thing just, it just stands out. It's just something that just makes you, you know, the story would have to be especially strong to get by that kind of thing, because it just makes you think, it just seems amateurish.
Well, let's turn to the rejections themselves now and then, and the art, let's say, of rejection. You've seen a lot of rejection slips from your authors, so is it fair to say that you're somewhat of an expert on rejection notices?
I think that's fair to say.
What are some of the characteristics of a good rejection, a legitimate one?
One characteristic is a personal note that is sent to you from the editor, and it's true that that's not always possible, and it's true that even for myself, you get so many manuscripts, and you have so much time, you only have so much time, and that to write to spend as much time as each manuscript deserves isn't always possible, but I will say that for me, the more well-written the story is, if I can't use it for one reason, it may be really well written, but there's something about the story doesn't quite click, or vice versa, the plot idea is great, but there's something about the writing that's not quite up to what I want. But I will, you know, I'll endeavor to write a better rejection letter. It kind of inspires you, actually, the writing. Otherwise, I always write something personal on each rejection slip, but it's different than writing a real letter or note. I think any time you have a form rejection slip, no matter how well written it is, it just doesn't do it for the author who put so much work into the fiction and is just hoping for so much, and then you get back a form letter that everybody gets, and it just doesn't seem fair.
I was going to ask how common in your experience these form rejections are. I mean, how many publishers and editors go that route?
Oh, it's probably 80 to 90% are just pure forms, and maybe with a signature on the bottom, or thanks, or sorry, or one word, but basically they're all forms. And then you have, I would say, the next step up would be, there are some magazines that they use a format. They'll do something like, it looks like it's a it looks like it's a real note written to you. It has your name and it has your story name in it. But then it will have something like, this story just doesn't grab me. Or, alas, it just didn't work for me. Or variations on that I see time and again from the same magazines, that there may be a word or two changed, but they're basically the same thing. Or you'll get these kind of form rejections with checkboxes, where they'll check a box off about why they rejected it, the plot or the language, the grammar, it's too cliche, whatever it is. And, you know, that gives you, and sometimes they'll have a few lines written underneath it explaining why they checked that box. Of course, those, anything that you get that's personal and pertains to your story directly is an improvement over a form.
And a good rejection would also address the content and not hit just because the market doesn't sell this right now. Is that your point of view?
From my point of view, but if it is it's just like refrigerators. We went looking at refrigerators, and I say, well, this Amana, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, it's all the same company, basically. And it's the same with the books now. And so if you have somebody in the corporate office saying, this is what you need to do, the editor really can't do much more than say that, although they could address your writing and tell you why they liked it, but express sympathy. But I mean, if that's their criteria, that's their criteria. And often more and more editors don't have the freedom to actually decide for themselves.
Is it a threat to good literature that it's become so corporate and that the independent publishing houses are having such a tough time surviving? I know for magazines and books, too, the independents are having a bit of a tough time. Is that a threat to the genre of literature?
I think it is. I think it is, and it's the same with the consolidation of the bookstores, the large chains. It's not that they're bad, but the more choices you have, I think the better. And the more editors you have, the more independents, the more points of view you have. And even if you have a large company, let's say it's consolidated, five or six book companies, and even if the company is enlightened, they give the editor full choice, and even if the editor is really well, is a good editor and well-meaning and tries to do the best and does do a good job, you still have their one point of view instead of, you know, six different points of views when it used to be six different companies. And I think that's a little bit, can be dangerous. It's definitely limiting, and it tends to make for, sameness, and it tends to make for trends, and everybody tries to jump on the bandwagon to get, it's kind of like TV or sitcoms where you have to appeal to so many millions, and it's becoming that way with books. You have to appeal to such a large audience that it waters down, I think, what we're reading.
You are fully independent, right? I mean, the Rejected Quarterly and, you know, it's your baby, and you know, you're not answering to any corporate.
No, that's right.
What are the pros and cons of that for you?
Well, mostly they're pros. The pros are that it's the way I've always viewed my writing is that it's not worth doing. Writing to me is fun, but it's hard work and it's time consuming. And I don't see the point of doing it if I'm taking orders from somebody. Then, you know, I could do it as a job, but I'd rather do other things. And it's the same with editing. If I'm taking direction, that's a type of job, and it's not necessarily bad, but it's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking to make decisions in my writing and make decisions in my editing. And the cons are, there's a big con, is the money. I can't support myself by it, obviously, and so it becomes harder to do because after work, I'm often tired, and there's only so much time, so much energy. So there are definite cons to it also.
So this is kind of the classic kitchen table publication. So, I mean, you know, it's just what people call it, where, you know, you don't go to some big corporate office or something. You're producing it on your own.
Right. I'm in my office right now, which is like a glorified closet, actually.
Yeah. If you're independent like that and you haven't gone into a lot of debt to do this and all of that sort of thing, is the challenge more the time rather than the lack of money that comes in from it?
Well, the challenge is the time and the time to do it right, you know, and to get it out in a, at least a somewhat timely, I'm the only one who sets the deadline, but still it needs to be out in a fairly timely manner or it loses its, you know, for subscribers or bookstores or library. It needs to have that. So the time is the biggest issue for me. And that relates to quality. I want to have the time to read everything, read it carefully, to do my columns well, to have time to research and interview. If I'm interviewing somebody, I want to know who I'm interviewing. I may have read some books by them, but I want to be as well versed as I can. So it all takes quite a bit of time. And that's the huge issue. Haven't had to go into debt for it, but I do invest in it, and I love doing it. I wouldn't still be doing it. I started in August of '98, and as far as making a real publication. And the other con of it, being an independent like this, has to do with what I mentioned earlier with the consolidation of bookstores. All these chains, I can't get into these large chains. Independents are very open to taking the rejected quarterly, but every issue, it seems I have to replace one or two because they're going out of business. And I'm kind of in a catch-22 situation because I'm not large enough. I mean, there are press distributors that would be happy to take it, but once the bookstore takes a cut, and if I'm mailing them, and then if the distributor, I'm losing so much money, it makes it very difficult. The more stores I get into, the more in debt I'd go into. So it has to be small. It has to be myself calling all the bookstores independently and dealing with them directly. And sometimes they don't want to do that. They want to deal with one distributor.
Do you have a lot of individual subscribers?
Not a lot, but I have some that go all the way back to when we started,
yeah.
And we always get new ones, and they're pretty loyal, so the people that subscribe usually stay subscribers, and I don't get out as much as I used to, but I try and do I do a book fair or two a year, try and get exposure that way also.
That was the next thing I wanted to ask about is how you get exposure and how you get the word out. So there's book fairs and calling bookstores. What other kind of things can you do as an independent magazine publisher to get the word out?
Well, we're listed in a Novel and Short Story Writers Market and listed in numerous online writers listings. And, when I first started, I went to as many as I could find and listed the guidelines. And a lot of others pick it up from those. So it's gotten a lot of exposure that way in the small press. In some of the small press, writer's guides also, book fairs, and for a while, especially in the beginning, when I had a lot of kind of speculative fiction stories, I went to a few science fiction conventions, where they had a room where people sold books and types of things like that. I'm involved in a combined book exhibit right now that just exhibited at the ALA convention for libraries. I'm with EBSCO, so people can subscribe that way, or institutions can subscribe that way. So, a lot of it takes time, and it depends. It just depends how much I have to pursue that. But
Let me just interject real quickly to explain to listeners that EBSCO is a company that keeps a catalog of all magazines that are available that libraries can order through, so it facilitates ordering.
Right.
Just for the record, just so folks know what EBSCO is.
Yeah, and so that's pretty much it.
How much of a market is there for the back issues versus current subscriptions? I mean, what's the mix there?
Well, more for current subscriptions and more for the current issue. When I go to book fairs, that's when the back issues usually sell, when people are there in person. And they, for whatever reason, they flip through it and they see a certain article or a certain feature they like, or the cover. Sometimes people want to, they like the cover, so they'll take that one. They just want to read one issue, and they'll take that one over the others because of the cover, or they'll ask me for recommendation. But that's where the back issues usually go. Sometimes people write in and say, I want this issue with the interview with so-and-so or something like that. But usually, a lot of the people who order single copies online are people who are writers and want to see if it's some place they want to display their writing or if their writing will fit into it. And so they don't really care. Some of them don't care which issue they have, just as long as they're seeing one.
Okay, well, let's turn back away from the business end of it to the rejections themselves. I mean, you've seen an awful lot of rejection slips over the years. Can you share a few of the favorites of yours with us?
Oh, sure. Well, there's one from this issue that I thought was pretty amusing. It starts off, it says, "Dear Scott, by the time you read this, your manuscript will have already been rejected. There's no sense in asking me why or what you could have done differently, because I've already moved on to other stories. It wasn't you. It was me. Who am I kidding? It was partly you. You didn't make me feel like you were really interested in making this relationship work. I didn't feel any sparks between us. You didn't make me laugh. This story wasn't a match made in heaven, but the next one maybe. Submit again. If you don't, you'll regret it. Maybe not today. Maybe not tomorrow. But soon, and for the rest of your life." And I think there was a postscript that said, P.S. you can keep the ring or something like that. I'm keeping the ring. I mean, P.S. I'm keeping the ring. And then there's some others that, you know, some of them are pretty, and of course, that's humorous, but the writer expressed to me that he wasn't at all amused by it. And I'll read a few of the, some that are pretty insulting, actually. Let's see, how about, "I don't care if you waste your time, but why don't you stop wasting mine? You are a poser, not a poet." Here's another one. "This submission is so bad that it's not worth wasting paper to respond to." So that was written on the back of this person's self-addressed stamped envelope. "You must drink lots of strong coffee in order to stay awake long enough to arrange these things that literate kids abandon when they stop playing with asphalt blocks." Okay, here's one. "No doubt you are very sincere in what you are doing, but for my money, it bears no more relationship to poetry than it does to frying eggs or taking part in round-the-world skateboard races." Here's one that says, "You are not a woman. This is by a woman. Sorry."
I wonder what they meant by that.
I don't know. But I don't remember what the submission was. But, let's see. "The ability to string words together into a comprehensible phrase or sentence is what distinguishes human beings from a dictionary in the lower animal forms. When you have reached that stage in your development, try us again." So when you get something like that, you can say they're written, they're not forms, they're written right to the author, but they're pretty insulting. "Thanks for submitting your work to us, but frankly, I don't know what to do with it. If you write poetry, we'd love to see it." And that was for a poem.
So what's the healthy way for a writer to respond or react to rejection? I mean, no one likes to be rejected. So how should a writer respond? Let's assume it's a decent rejection. Let's say it's a rejection letter. That's one of the good ones. That's personal and gives reasons for rejecting it. What's the best way to respond?
Well, if it's a rejection that actually gives ideas, and I've had a few of those, and I guess I've written a few of those, then I think the best thing to do is to, if you agree with it, then to take that to heart and to apply it. If not to the next, you know, you could actually apply it to that story and resubmit. I've actually had somebody do that and accepted a story that way. Or to just apply it to your next story, if you want to move on. If there's not direct, say, advice, but just that, they're rejecting it, but kind of encouraging letter. I think the best thing to do is to take heart that people have enjoyed it and given you some express that they've liked the humor, or the writing, or whatever it is, and keep going. If it's not, if it's just a personal letter that says, "Sorry, we can't use this, we don't have time, we don't have space, and we have so many submissions," it's pretty hard to take heart from it. I think you can use it as motivation, just saying, "Okay, well, you know, I'm going to do something so good that they're not going, nobody will reject it, or I'm just going to keep submitting until somebody appreciates it." And I think that's the attitude to have, is that, if you really have worked on your story, if you really believe in it, then I think the attitude is that there's, my attitude is always that the editor can't appreciate it, and I don't mind if somebody thinks that about me, and it can be true. I mean, if, people have different wavelengths, and sometimes something doesn't click with one person, it clicks with another. So if one editor doesn't like it, that doesn't mean the next one won't. In fact, in this newest issue, there was an interview with Daniel Pinkwater, and he expressed that attitude really well. And he said, "I've always assumed that anyone rejecting my work is jealous or ignorant and to be pitied." Well, I don't go that far in my attitude, but I think it's healthy to believe in your work more than you believe in what, it doesn't matter how successful or intelligent the editor is. If you believe in your work, you'll find a place, you'll find somebody who will publish it. And I think, in my case, sometimes I've turned to self-publishing that way, or, there's always university presses. You don't have to, it depends why you're trying to publish. If it's to make a lot of money, then your options are limited. If not, you could publish with a small press and perhaps not make money, but at least have your work in print.
And of course, nowadays it's even easier to get the word out there if one publishes online. Do you intend to continue the Rejected Quarterly as a printed publication? And if so, why? Why not just go online?
Well, I'm a traditionalist. I'm kind of old-fashioned. I like to print. I mean, I'm online every day, so it's not that I don't use the new technology. I love it, but I like something about paper. I like a newspaper. I like paperback books or hardback books. I like a print magazine, and I don't find myself going online and reading entire publications. I'll go online and read an article or a story, but I won't read a newspaper, say, or I won't read a book online. It's just not me, and that's, I'm publishing for people like that, I guess. I like a magazine. I like something that you can hold in your hand and have and put aside and put on your shelf. And there's a place, obviously there's a place for online because that's the direction things are going, but I don't intend to go that way. I've been updating my website for a long time and haven't posted it, but I'll probably add more content to it, but I don't plan on doing an online publication. That's just not what I want to do.
Well, Dan, thank you very much for being my guest on Periodical Radio. You've been a very interesting interviewee, and thanks for sharing your perspectives on rejection and aspects of having an independent publication.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
A four-issue subscription to the Rejected Quarterly is $19.99 from Black Plankton Press, P.O. Box 1351, Cobb, California, 95426. Thank you for listening to Periodical Radio. I'm your host, Steve Black.